and welcome to Redefining Outbound, a podcast series for sales leaders. I'm one of your hosts, Frida Odeson, VP of US Sales at Cognizant. I'll be interviewing a range of forward-thinking sales leaders on how and why B2B buying behavior has changed, and we'll be unpacking why these trends are important for Outbound. I hope you enjoy the episode. All right. Hello, everyone. I am here today with Trent Dressel, VP of Sales at D&D Wholesale Supply. Trent, welcome to the podcast.
Frida, it's great to be here. I'm really looking forward to the conversation today.
Yeah, awesome. Super excited. We have a few topics to cover today, and we have three. I know you're big on LinkedIn. I usually did the mistake to just now start following you on LinkedIn, which, you know, the mistake part is that I should have followed you way back. But there's a lot of like interesting posts that you're sharing. So we're going to go through a few of those today. But can we just start with introducing yourself for the listeners?
I worked in software sales for 5 years and then exited the corporate world about a year ago to join my family wholesale distribution business, D&D Wholesale Supply. We manufacture and distribute pharmaceutical containers and medical supplies. So it's been a big change going from selling software, this abstract cloud-based tech, to now we're making physical products, we're shipping, logistics, inventory, margins are really important. So it's been a bit of a culture shock for me, but a good change of pace. But a lot of the foundational sales principles I learned early in my career, especially around outbound prospecting, are as relevant as ever as we seek to acquire new customers.
That's super interesting. I feel like most time we have SaaS companies on the podcast, so super excited to get sort of this perspective. So with that in mind, like, what does redefining outbound mean to you?
As I think about outbound and redefining what that looks like in 2024, I think it's getting back to the basics. It's easy to overcomplicate what outbound prospecting actually is. Early in my career as a sales development rep, outbound prospecting was identifying great accounts, identifying the buyer persona within those accounts, and then relentlessly calling and emailing those prospects until you can hopefully set a meeting with one of them, generate pipeline. The more pipeline coverage the organization has, the more revenue you're ultimately going to generate. So that ultimately is what pipeline is, a system of generating meetings. And as I take those concepts to our business today, we're a very small business. We work with large B2B organizations. All we're focused on is acquiring customers. So how can we identify the right accounts, send them the right messaging that's going to resonate, and then generate enough interest that's compelling for them to actually want to speak with us? That's all outbound is essentially the process of acquiring customers. And you can overcomplicate it with thinking about, well, how do we use AI? How do we automate? How do we use a numbers game, reach out to more prospects? But at the end of the day, it's just identifying prospects, contacting prospects, and trying to sell them on taking your meeting. And that's all outbound prospecting is, setting meetings.
Right, like selling the ticket to the show, basically.
There's nothing else. And it's not losing sight of the inputs. What are the revenue generating activities that achieve that result? It's finding prospects. So whether you're doing territory plans or LinkedIn Sales Navigator to identify the prospects, and then contacting them with the messaging that's going to interest them because they have 15 other similar messages in their inbox. And then how do you set enough meetings to hit the pipeline you need to achieve your revenue target? And that's all it is. And any activities outside that other than self-development or maybe helping other people, in my view, is a waste of time. So how do you be more focused on the revenue generating activities and only do more of that? That's all it is to me.
Love it. So back to basics, stay focused, track the metrics.
Sure. Yeah. And I also, if you extrapolate that out further, I think about it in terms of skill or will. And this applies to any rep as they seek to increase performance and make more money. Beginning with will, this is simply your work ethic and the amount of volume you put in. Everyone listening to this right now can say, you know what, I'm going to make an extra 20 calls, or hey, I'm committed to leading the team on activities today. You can just work harder. Everyone can do that. And there's always the ability to turn up that knob. But eventually you're constrained by time in a day. Everyone has the 8-hour work day or the 9-to-5 or however long you're willing to work. So eventually you reach a capacity where you have to then focus on the skill. How do you become more effective at making sure you're targeting the right accounts, making sure your messaging built around this account is really going to resonate with the buyer persona, making sure you're contacting them in a way that is professional, but also is very persistent and very targeted. And then you can improve all these things. You can improve answer rate, set rate, show rate, conversion rate. You can improve email open rate. You can improve email response rate. These are all skills that can be improved. And that is the skill component. So once a rep can get incredibly focused on the will and the skill, that is how we recognize better results as it relates to prospecting, especially.
Cool. Super interesting. And so I think one thing that we're all aware of coming in 2024 that might change things a little bit is the increased strictness on some of the spam filters out there, the email spam filters. What are your thoughts around this? Like, what do you think leaders need to focus on to ensure that their team still cuts through the noise there?
Sure. So I shared something on LinkedIn that proved to be a bit controversial, which I'm still evaluating how that is the case. But as you think about channels to communicate with prospects, you have email like you're talking about, and then increased privacy security, which could result in spam. If you're unable to reach a prospect via email, whether a spam filter or they say unsubscribe, hey, I don't want to receive your emails. For example, a prospect told me yesterday, you're clogging up my inbox, Trent. Stop emailing me. And it hurt a little bit. But if I reach that barrier and I still feel so strongly about the opportunity for us to help that prospect in their business, I'm going to start calling them. I'm going to add them to a call-only sequence. If I'm unable to reach them via call or email, how else can I get creative via an introduction through a mutual connection, maybe on LinkedIn? Are they going to be at a relevant industry event? Can I physically show up to their office? Can I write them a letter? What do I need to do to get their attention? They need to know who I am, who my company is, and ultimately why this particular problem is important enough for them to take time to want to solve, and that we are uniquely capable of solving it for them. So if I'm unable to reach them via email, I'm going to utilize another channel of communication until I can get their attention.
Got it. Love it. I'm curious, what is a current challenge, either yourself as a leader is facing or for your team that you're focused on solving?
Right now, a challenge is expanding our total addressable market. And the way I think about this is we are hyper-focused on contacting the accounts that we believe can yield the most revenue. So for example, we could go after an individual veterinarian clinic. Their total spend maybe is $10,000 annually. We would need thousands of those to reach our revenue aspirations. Or we could go to a corporate chain of veterinarians and they own 100 veterinarians. So we could go after just those, we call them consolidators. Or we could go an even level higher and go directly to the vet distributors. So these are 3 to 5 large distributors that then have channels of distribution with thousands of veterinarians. So as you look at those different customer segments, they have different spend thresholds. So we are focused on what are the customer bands that have the greatest spend thresholds? And then how do we move beyond just the animal health market? That's what we're focused on. So veterinarians, clinics, hospitals. Can we move into the human market? Can we target hospitals? Can we get a product to sell into an entirely different industry? So as a sales leader, that's what I'm focused on, is how do we maximize our partnership capabilities and revenue from the customers that can spend the most money with us? And then how do we then create new markets, whether it be getting new products or hiring or buying a company to get us exposure into an entirely new market? So I now view it as, how do I identify the opportunity that we can then go after? And then it's just a rinse and repeat of the process. Who are the accounts? Who are the buyers? What is the messaging we need to use? How do we get meetings? How many meetings do we need? How much pipeline comes with those meetings? And then ultimately, how much revenue can we yield from those meetings? Let's retain the customers. Let's expand the spend over time. And that's all it is.
Cool. Super interesting. I mean, that's a super exciting challenge to be working with. Like, I think that's where you want to be, right? As a company, focusing on that.
Yeah, it's always fun to identify where the opportunity is, and then what do we need to do to capitalize on that opportunity? And the bigger opportunities you go after. So, for example, if you're a swimmer, you can only win the Olympics if you're in the Olympics pool. But if you're just swimming in the public pool, you're not going to win the race. So if we're not even in the right opportunities or going after the right markets or the right accounts, then we have no chance of achieving our objectives. So we're really focused on seeing the forest above the trees and not just, hey, let's make a million cold calls today, send a billion emails automated and just sloshing through trying to chop down bushes. We're trying to see the forest from the trees and really making sure we're focused on the right areas.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So I want to dive into a few LinkedIn posts from you lately. There's definitely
this should be fun.
Some gold there. Yeah, this will be fun. So we have three posts that I want to cover today. The first one I thought was quite hilarious. You are sort of calling against this AI bot and trying to do a cold call. Yeah, I think everyone should go in and watch this. No spoiler alerts, but it's not going too well. It was a pretty rude AE bot, I would say. But based on this, I'm curious, like, what is your take on AI? Like, what are the opportunities? What are the risks?
Surprisingly, getting destroyed on the phone by an AI, it hurts just as much as a human, surprisingly. So the post you're referencing is I'm partnered with a group called Hyperbound, and they are an AI cold calling solution. So they basically have AI buyer personas loaded up, a VP of HR, a VP of sales, and they give you a scenario. Hey, you're selling Workday to a VP of HR, go. And then it grades you afterwards. So it's a great role play exercise. And as I think about AI in the broader context, I use it as an intelligence-seeking mission. So if I'm sitting here and I'm curious about how do we grow our business broadly, I'll go type in ChatGPT, hey, here's the context, you're my business mentor, you've sold a company before, what would you recommend we focus on? And it's going to say, okay, product development, cost structure, margins, all this stuff. So you can ask it questions to expand your knowledge. I think that's useful. But as I observe what the actual business impact is right now in 2024, it primarily is driving productivity gains in the employee base. And the main use cases for that would be from a customer success standpoint. So you go on a website, there's a chatbot, that would be pretty useful. As you think about an extension of coding for an engineer to make them more productive, as you think about giving them more intelligence as it relates to internal resources or their general inquiries, just being curious about, hey, what do we need to know? So that's really what I'm seeing. But as I think about the application to sales, of course, you have the cold calling role play, which you would hope that it helps reps better understand what to say to ultimately increase set rates and effectiveness on the phone. So as a skill development piece, you see some AI applications as you think about like a Lavender helping you or a Grammarly helping you write emails and be a more effective writer. So if you're able to better communicate with prospects, perhaps you can avoid those spam filters. Perhaps you can send more hyper-targeted emails, spending less time on it, because that's always the trade-off as you think about volume with automation or hyper-personalization is the time trade-off and how that impacts your response rates. And then, of course, if you can use AI to just press a button and say, we're looking for this buyer persona, accounts that meet this criteria, 1,000 employees in the financial services industry, VPs of HR, and it can build a big list for you, that may make me or another rep more efficient. So there's certainly some advantages there, but ultimately it has to drive productivity gains, and whatever cost you would be paying for an AI solution, you need to see a significant return as far as quantifiable productivity that ultimately leads to revenue, cost savings, or mitigation of risk.
Are salespeople's jobs threatened by AI?
I believe entry-level jobs could be at risk, not in the next 3 to 5 years or so, but I believe as you think about lower-level sales reps that are more in that glorified call center in a way where they're not necessarily a specialist understanding an industry perspective or point of view. They're more so some of these companies that I've observed, they hire large amounts of recent grads. They know that they're going to experience big turnover. Some of them will promote from within. Those more commoditized sales roles where it's just, we got to make a ton of calls, we really don't invest a whole lot of training. I think that there eventually will be solutions that could outsource or automate their work in a way. But I believe the reps that are uniquely specialized in their domain and they have a unique industry perspective and a skill set that allows them to promote from within, to not only master the outbound prospecting, but once you can move beyond that to now, we know pipeline generation, we know how to do that, but now we know how to do discovery, solution presentation, negotiations. I don't see those more middle of the sales cycle. I don't see those steps being replaced anytime soon. So reps that have points of view, unique industry perspectives, and ultimately can communicate really effectively and humanize with the buyer, I don't see those large deals being replaced by AI anytime soon. But of course, everything could change. I see the role of AI being used to make sales reps 10x more effective. So if anything, it would just be less sales reps. And then those sales reps that are in the field really need to know how to leverage these technologies and constantly be learning, be very curious about the changes and embrace it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And super interesting take. Okay, so moving on from something completely different from AI to in person. a post from you recently, I'm going to read it real quick. Had an in-person meeting with the largest deal in my pipeline this week. Accidentally showed up an hour early, caught them by surprise. At least we brought a dozen donuts. That always works. Yeah. We made more progress in that hour than we had over the previous few virtual meetings. So would love to hear your take on, the element of showing up in person. Like, is it coming back post-COVID? What impact can this have?
As we've talked about, so much of sales is communication and relationship building. I don't see an AI, a humanoid robot showing up in a hotel room with a dozen Dunkin' Donuts with a customer saying, I'm here to close the deal today. Let's talk about your KPIs. It's a human. We showed up in person. We shook their hand. We looked at them. We spoke. We said bye. We listened. We made them feel special. And as you think about large deals, that's what it takes. We showed up to a veterinarian conference in Orlando, which was a unique experience in and of itself. We had no expectations. We didn't have a booth. We had general admission passes. And our objective was to identify opportunities. So we walked around to every single booth and we looked at them and asked, what do they do? How do they make money? Could we help them? What problems do they maybe have? And out of that came multiple meetings. And it has just so happened, the biggest opportunity in my pipeline, we knew they were going to be there, but I wasn't sure if the buyers I was working with were going to be there. So I emailed them. I was sitting at dinner and we were like, you know what? I wonder if they're here. I emailed them and I'd been in talks beforehand, but it was sort of ambiguous. And I said, hey, we're here. I don't know if you're here, but if you are, we'd love to meet. And then they replied back instantly with a calendar invite and say, come to our hotel room, 45th floor, tomorrow at 9 a.m. And the buyer I had been working with, her boss happened to be there. So all of a sudden, we get to go meet them in person and just ask them, hey, how are things going? Where are we at? What do you need from us? And that accelerated our deal, which ultimately this week resulted in a very large purchase order. We had been working on that deal for nearly 6 months, but the progress we made being able to see them in person just for 45 minutes, that connection, I can just tell we're much closer now and it's much more real. We now text on the cell phone, we can call each other and we can say, hey, you remember the donuts? We were sitting there eating together and you can't quantify the impact of that. I love sitting here at this desk and meeting with people virtually and it's I can meet with many, many accounts doing that. But when we're talking really large deals, you can't beat meeting them in person. It really accelerates and you can make a lot more progress, I believe, and deepen the connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And strong ROI on donuts, for sure.
They absolutely loved it. I don't eat donuts. I didn't want to eat donuts, but we said, you know what? This is going to be unique because the previous vendor that had just walked out, they didn't take donuts, but they're always going to remember the donuts. And then one of them actually ate a donut. So we were sitting there eating them and then we left them open. So it was just a fun thing to do.
That's awesome. Yeah, I actually incidentally gave my enterprise sales manager a KPI to do 3 in-person visits this quarter, because I think it's so important to just show up in person and build that connection.
Totally. You can't beat it.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So moving on to the last post of today. For the sake of radio, I'm not going to read this entire post, but basically the gist of it is that it took you the same amount of effort to make 50K as it did 300K. And the main difference was just in terms of like how you approached things and how you were thinking about things. And the sort of end line here is like work to reach your potential, not your quota. And so much more goes into the mindset than you think. Did I summarize that well?
Sure. And I like to talk about money. I like to be very transparent about it. You have a lot of people posting, for example, on LinkedIn or giving advice. And I'm always very interested in what are the real world results? What have you actually achieved? Not just from an abstract standpoint, but tangible results. And I think that resonates with people because I started out as an entry-level SDR1 with a 50K on target earning, was able to out-earn that OTE, and then 4x my income within 4 years of the same company by going to a senior account executive level 5. And a common through line in that is, as I identified how that was possible, it comes down to the skill and will component. I worked essentially the same amount of time, let's just say 60 hours a week. I physically did the same amount of activity, but my income was 4x greater in 1 year than the first year. A lot of things changed. So for example, rather than just being responsible for pipeline generation as an SDR, my responsibilities increased to now being tied to a revenue target. And of course, that made me more valuable to the organization, therefore allowing me to make more money. But as any rep seeks to make more income, you make exactly what you deserve to make. You can't control the accounts you're given in your book of business always. You can't always control what your name is, who your manager is, and what you look like, how funny you are, your talent, your experience. You can't control this stuff, but you can control how you approach the job. And I've always looked at it of I'm working to reach my potential, not my quota. So when I was ramping as an account executive, I never once thought, oh, okay, I got to close $30,000 this quarter, or my second quarter is an AE. I got to close $100,000. I'm setting targets that are way in excess of what the company gives me, because the company, it's just someone in revenue operations saying, we got 35 reps, we need them all to close $1 million. Okay, we'll hit 20% growth. Boom, we'll get another round of funding. Let's go public. Whereas I'm looking at it and say, I'm going to set a massive target that I believe better represents my potential. And then that gives you a chance to outperform your quota. Hopefully you've got some accelerators, uncapped commission, and you close a few big deals, and all of a sudden you're able to earn way more money than you were expected to make in your OTE. So it's simply, how do you increase deal size? How do you increase win rate? How do you get significantly more pipeline coverage, 3 to 4x, than your quota, and making sure you're in the right opportunity vehicle as an account executive selling a product you believe in to the right companies? And those were the changes that allowed me to increase my income in sales.
Mm-hmm. And how do you foster this mindset as a leader on a team? Because some people just want to get in, hit their quota, and go home, right?
Right. And that's totally fine. It's a bell curve. It's always a distribution. You're always going to have high performers. You're always going to have low performers. So it in a way comes down to the hiring bar of what type of people are you seeking out on your team. I'm a sales team of one, so I'm not in a position to tell all of these people what they need to be doing. The point of micromanaging, hey, you got to make 100 calls a day, and then all of a sudden it's going to unlock this. There's always a bell curve. So some people are better, some people are worse. But as I think about what I would do in that situation, I would want to create a culture of accountability and a culture of results, a high performance culture where people are compensated based on performance. There is no entitlement. We all believe in hard work. We all believe in doing the absolute best we can with what we got. And if that manifests in making your on-target earnings, then maybe that's a wild success. But I've always been someone that very competitive. I want to win. I'm not ashamed to say I want to make a lot of money. And when I look at myself in past settings with the team dashboard on the Salesforce, hey, how many calls have I made? What is my pipeline at? What is my closed revenue? I expect to be top. And anything less than that, I don't feel like I am maximizing my potential. And when I don't feel like I'm growing as a person, I'm deeply unsatisfied and I'm just not, I don't feel good about myself. I feel much better about myself when I'm performing, when I'm doing well. My identity is not totally connected to my revenue performance, and those are dangerous waters. But I just want to do the best I can and provide for myself, my family, and live the best life. And that looks like showing up and trying my best, and the rest will take care of itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So sort of hiring people that inherently have that mindset, right?
People who are hungry, people who want to win, that aren't just here to, oh, just fly under the radar. I'll work here for 2 years, get it on my resume, and then all of a sudden I'll go over there, get more money. I want to be around people who are hungry and who want to go into the market and dominate and win. That's what interests me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there's some cool stories related to this where, like, there's a new hire coming into the sales team, and the sales team is selling, let's say, 50K deals consistently. And this new hire just doesn't know that. And they're going in and they're just like, all of a sudden, because they don't have that bias of our deals are supposed to be 50K, they're just coming in and selling a 200K deal. Just because they didn't know that that was not supposed to happen.
It's amazing. I think that's amazing.
Like related to this, right? An interesting mindset to think about.
Outliers. And all of a sudden it changes the think of everyone else. Some people on the team will be resentful and say, that should have been me. They've been here less time and they got lucky. They got that deal. Some people will look at that and be motivated and inspired by the art of the possibility. Oh, Jeanette closed a $200,000 deal. I got to go get me a six-figure deal now. Hey, let me go meet with her to see how she did it.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So we're at the final question, which is a regular one that we always ask. So I'd love to hear from you. What is something that you recommend sales leaders to start, stop, and continue doing in 2024?
I've recently been all about mindfulness and presence. I believe the greatest gift you can give anyone is just your absolute undivided attention and presence. This really matters as it relates to meeting with your prospects, not checking LinkedIn while you're on a sales meeting or on your phone. You're just completely focused on what they're saying in a non-judgmental way, seeking to understand, to really understand, and then asking second, third layer questions. I think that this is especially important as a leader, leading from a place of intention and understanding and really connecting with your reps or with your people on your team. You're not just the leader because you have the title, but you're someone people look to as an inspiration, someone that really cares about them, someone that understands them. And I think selling and leading from a place of intentionality, emotionally stable, feeling good about where you're at, self-love, I think a lot of success stems from that, because if you're not really in tune with yourself, then it's going to be hard to connect with other people. So that's something I've been really focused on. So leveling myself with the breath and being very intentional about the interactions I have, about how I show up. I know I'm not going to take for granted the success I'm going to achieve, but I'm really focused on how I show up each step of the way and who it forces me to become, because ultimately that's what people are going to remember, is how you made them feel. So I know that that's a bit of an abstract thought and not necessarily a start, stop, continue, but I would say really leaning into the connection and presence, because I think that will lead to more motivated employees, more retention, more engagement, better performance, as everyone is really connected from a place of a love, but also understanding as well. And I think that that's really important.
Yeah, 100% agree. And I think as things have been a lot of online, you know, people are meeting and they're on their email at the same time, they're slacking, you know, there's not that, we rarely have that luxury of undivided attention anymore. So I love that. And I think that's a really good advice. So thank you for that.
Of course, Frida.
All right, Trent, thank you so much for coming to the podcast today. I think it's been a good one.
A wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed it.